resort and casino. Nothing else comes close.
They're trying to get away. Left it for Carrier. Now Atkinson picks it up. Atkinson moving at center with Jeremy into the Boston line, trying to break through. Go to Meehan, going in on goal. A load of backhand shot. He scores! Jerry Meehan!
Well, I'm glad that I didn't go anywhere. And I was just, I had no life, and I was standing in the parking lot for a little bit, taking in the sun.
Sorry, I'm plugging my stuff in. Give me a minute.
That's okay. But, yeah, looks like, you know, Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, back with you here for time indisclosed.
I was almost gone.
It's kind of my fault. I was talking to you in the parking lot.
The air on the car was cooling it down. I was almost at lunch. We're back. We're having some technical difficulties on the other side of things. We'll see if we can get Sabres Live back for you here over the next hour or so. We've also got Tim and Brad coming up at 1 o'clock. So, for the most part, it's still going to be normal programming today. No issue there.
Yeah, no issue there.
So, what were we talking about today? Where do we want? Do we want to jump right back into Dylan Larkin? We didn't get to talk football much.
We didn't get to talk football much. Though this typically isn't the time that you'd hear anything football.
No.
You know, something about it, though, with I want to dig back into that last call that we took, actually, on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. The ranking of Benson, Byram, Tuck. And what needed to be done, what needs to be done, what's the priority? Because I like that we kind of disagreed a little bit on this.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not a huge disagreement. We kind of would prioritize both of them very high. You'd want those deals done. But I think Byram should be, or Benson should be the first one, mostly because of the fact that he is a restricted free agent. Restricted or not, he is a free agent. And watch all the times that we go ahead and just write off that RFAs never get signed. All of a sudden, though, if you sign Byram, that could lead to a predatory offer sheet.
Right, because, I mean, they don't have a ton of cap space. What is it, 12.9 the Sabres have to work with this offseason? I can't worry about offer sheets until I see them more often.
That is true. But they are seventh in cap tied up in the National Hockey League, which I guess makes sense that, you know, you were a top 10 team within the NHL this year and you have a top 10 team tied up with cap space. Thank goodness you made the playoffs. Because this would look really bad on you if you had a 15-year playoff drought and you were, oh, by the way, we have the seventh most cap space tied up in the NHL. That would be such a bad look. Oh, boy. Good thing you finally broke through, because this would look like a disastrous tenure for Kevin Adams. Instead, now everyone goes, hey, maybe he was right about a lot of things all along.
It is, again, very funny about how it all worked out for him.
Works out because, yeah, if you end up with not making the playoffs and you're that high up on contracts already tied up on the team, gross. So good job. Good job, Sabres.
So, yeah, but Byram Benson, it's not really that interesting. I mean, if you've heard us talk about it, it's not that surprising. Both of us having Tuck third and quite comfortably. For me with Tuck, it's more what I think the contract would be. I mentioned it last week. If they somehow got it to where it'd be 8 years, 8.5, I'd sign him back today. It wouldn't even have to be a discussion. 9, I could even get there.
It is the fact that he is the most attractive free agent by a long shot in unrestricted free agency. RFAs are really fascinating this year. They really are. Like, I mentioned Benson, and you're like, whatever, RFAs don't count, which is not incorrect.
They do count. Until I see offer sheets done more, I can't worry about it. We had a fun day getting excited about it a couple weeks ago with Jason Robertson, but ultimately it's always one of those, yeah, but no one's going to do it.
No one ever does it. But the RFA class, and I'm just only reading this by point totals, Robertson, Bedard, Cutter Gauthier, Leo Carlson, Anaheim has two of them they got to really deal with, Trevor Zegras, Pavel Dorofeyev, Adam Fantilli, Connor McMichael, Colin Graf, Zach Benson. So Benson's 10th overall in point totals for RFAs. But all of those free agents sound better than, after Darren Radish and Alex Tuch, 41-year-old Alex Ovechkin, Anthony Mantha, Patrick Kane.
Even if you wanted Malkin. Malkin's already signed with Pittsburgh.
Claude Giroux. Marcus Johansson.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, didn't he leave for Europe?
Maybe.
I'm going to confirm that one real quick. But that's my point is being made.
But you're right. The RFAs are the way more attractive group to even look at. But the problem is, though, I don't want to say never, because we're being facetious when we say that. But for the most part.
Johansson left for the Sweden Hockey League. So, So Marcus gone. Johansson's not even an UFA anymore.
The RFAs look way better. This is also why we've talked mainly about trades and not unrestricted free agency. It's because there's really not much there. It's why Tuch and Darren Radish are considered the two big fish there. Tampa is going to want to probably bring back Radish. We'll see if they can afford him. Same with Tuch. I would imagine the Sabres do want him back. It is the price point that is likely the issue. The price point along with, though, the length of term, right? If they could sign Tuch to 4 years, $11 million, I think they may do that. But 8 years, $10.5 million, $11 million, does sort of end that conversation potentially for them. Going back to the original point, though, with Byram and Benson, as I mentioned, I'm not going to worry too much about RFAs. The team has all the control. They have everything they can need to get that deal done. With Byram, and you mentioned it too with Benson, you don't want the number to spike. They'll have to get it done this year. The Byram number could really spike if they have another strong season. And Byram is a big part, which he would be. If they have a strong season, he would be a part of it. Then that number could jump up. And while you do have a guy like Roddy Mirka, who is coming up in the system, that top four defensive core is so strong. And it kind of allows you to not have maybe necessarily the greatest goalies in the world. They don't have the highest end of talent for the offensive forward group. I mean, Tage is a 40-goal scorer, but he's not a 90-point guy. He's not a 100-point guy. He's hit 90 points once in his career. And I want both of them signed, just in terms of number one, the defensive core. Byram is the face of that, but it's the defensive
core.
I'm
looking to save the most money possible, and I can tell you how to do that. I'm signing Zach Benson first, because what's more expensive? Zach Benson jumping from $900,000 to $7 to $8 million? Or Bo Byram going up from his 6.25 cap hit to maybe 10 per year.
Yeah.
I want to get the one that I have to get taken care of right now, because it is more money tied to the cap. Byram has a bigger cap hit that is already existing. Benson is about to get a real contract.
He's going to get a real contract. I don't know if it would necessarily. What did you say? $7.5-$8 million.
I'm going with 6.9 just to get near the Josh Doan contract, just to give me a figure.
Well, because I was.
But even
say,
if it's just six, right? Say it's a clean six.
Yeah,
it's a 6x7, right? Something like that. All right, then. First of all, Benson hits UFA at age 27,
mm-hmm.
which not many people do. So that re-signing of a deal will look really good. But it is. He's going to give you more of a jumping cap hit regardless this year than what Byram's jump is going to be. Because, Zach, if he's playing some of the best hockey at this point, you're maybe looking at in between Dahlin and Powers cap hits for Byram, right?
Yeah.
Just because of, you know, it's the price to pay for getting bridge contracts.
They're coming back.
All right, let's send it over to Sabres Live. I think we've got him back here.
Jerry Meehan passed over the weekend, and our condolences to his family as we start a little later than expected here on this Monday on Sabres Live. But a thought first and foremost on Jerry and what he meant to this organization.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, as a player, as a general manager, Jerry's done a lot of fantastic things. And we can talk about the Alexander McGillney, which McGillney thanked the Meehans and the Luce in his acceptance speech just over last season, the Dominic Kashuk trade and everything. But for me, it was every year that we got together with the alumni in the summertime for our golf tournament. And Jerry always spoke to the alumni present about, you know, the after career and the help that the alumni, if they needed, was available to them. A big point of conversation for many years has always been health insurance for retired players. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of players go back to Canada, to Europe, and they all have different insurance that can cover them. Like, in Canada and the U.S., it's totally different. And the players, when they retire, you can continue with your health insurance, but you have to pay for it. Right. It's not provided to you in retirement. And Jerry was one of the really force behind trying to get everybody health insurance when they retire, knowing that a lot of players, when they're in their older age, maybe they don't have, you know, the money or the background to be able to afford certain needs when it comes to that. And Jerry always spoke about him and obviously with his law degree, trying to find a solution with this issue that has been, you know, a problem with the retired players for years. So Jerry was so involved into trying to fix that. And still, last year, talking to the players at the golf tournament, trying to tell them, look, this is what we're trying to do. This is what we're looking for. So it was always, always about everybody else. It wasn't about Jerry. It was about everybody else. He wanted to help out as many people as he could, and he was just a great man.
First ever Sabres game, October 10th, 1970. First assist in franchise history. Yep. Multi-point game. Sabres beat the Penguins 2-1. Jerry Meehan, a terrific architect and greater human and mm-hmm. member of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, passed away at age 79 on Friday. With moving forward right now, this Sabres team, and we talk about, and we will get obviously to the Stanley Cup Final, which resumes tomorrow in Game 4 at Vegas. But yep. the Sabres, you were, you know, involved with the alumni when we had Darren Dreger on the show late last week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the continuation of this particular conversation surrounding Alex Tuch certainly seems from Darren's standpoint to be heading towards free agency for Alex. Heard or believed anything different at this point in time?
I have not heard or believed anything different at this time. I think that my initial reaction is if there was an agreement, or at least a form of agreement, we'd have been hearing about it now. Or if there was a contract or a willingness from either side to go to a certain place to agree to a contract, I think we would have heard from it now. I got a question from Greg on X. He asked me, he goes, what if the Sabres did this? $6 million next year, $12 million for 6 years, every year for six, and then $6 million the last year. So that would be $84 million over 8 years. I think what this question was in regard more to the cap hit, because wanting to keep the cap hit as low as possible next season when mm-hmm. there's not a lot of cap hit. Well, even if you give Alex Tuch $4 million next year and then you ramp it up, and there's rules from the difference of money you can go from year to year, it's the average of the contract over the years that becomes your cap hit. So in that example, even if you went $6 million next year, 12, 12, 12, 12, 12, 12, 6, whatever, it would be 10 and a half. That would be your cap hit. The Sabres have just under or just over $12 million of cap space for next year, and you got to sign other players. And so I think that is where the problem lies, is that even if you wanted to make it work, even if you were at $8 million right now, mm-hmm. that would still be very tight for everything else that you have to do this year.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we've said it from day one of the offseason. There's going to have to be a substantial amount of money that goes out, i.e. comes off the books, regardless of who and for how much, you know, the Sabres are able to retain some of the players who helped them significantly last year, this past season, getting to, you know, mm-hmm. Game 7 of Round 2. Interesting also of note, Dom at The Athletic has a good piece on Tuch and projecting and his actual value and the likelihood of a contract aging. You know, very well for someone who is now 30 years of age. And I won't spoil the conclusion, but I will say that you may have heard us talk in those terms before as to what Dom thinks Tuck's value is overall,
and
contractually speaking.
Now, for the Sabres, and the value for the rest of the league is completely different.
And that's what's really interesting about the article. So I would encourage you to go to The Athletic for that. Obviously, a lot of reports about Detroit and what's next for them with their captain, Dylan Larkin. Lainey Elliott in Detroit has heard that there were three teams that Larkin has suggested to GM Steve Yzerman that he would appreciate or consider a deal to, and those three are allegedly Vegas, Minnesota, and Florida.
Yes. So, and the Florida Panthers were a team I mentioned last week, saying that Florida is going to send a seventh-round pick to Detroit and say that works. But Dylan Larkin has a no-movement clause, so he gets to decide where and how this kind of transaction may go. That's why it's tough. I know we're in the business of wanting to get the information. Oh, Larkin wants to trade. What teams would he go to or whatnot? It puts Detroit in a very bad spot. Mm-hmm. Like, if that had just stayed quiet, and Detroit is working with Larkin behind the scene and says, which team do you want to go to? We'll make it work. I think Detroit probably would be able to get a little bit more in the deal, or maybe closer to market value for Larkin. Now, if you're those three teams, Vegas, Minnesota, and Florida, you're thinking, well, you have to deal with us, or you're not going to have a deal made. The player has his rights. And I think it makes it very, very tough for Steve Yzerman and the Detroit Red Wings. But you know what? If they had made the playoffs, or if they had been better over the last few years, they wouldn't be in this problem right now.
Correct. And it's 10 years without. And I think you continue to see a lot of speculation surrounding this, that Yzerman's history is one where he could play a little bit of hardball and maybe drag it out. But my question to you, and we briefly touched on it last week, that it's interesting the timing of this announcement, because you still had 3 weeks before the draft, which is now 2.5 weeks away here in Buffalo on the 26th and 27th. Like, my question to you would be, is there not heightened urgency for Yzerman to get this done ASAP, based on the fact that they are carrying the longest active playoff drought in the NHL now, and who knows what is going to unfold at free agency or on the trade front beyond this centerpiece in Dylan Larkin? So, like, do you think Yzerman can afford to drag this out?
No, I don't. I don't think you can do that with your captain and then come back and train camp.
I'll say, in the words of the late Cliff Fletcher, I mean, he said draft schmaff, but I'll say Captain Schmapton. I don't know how much that really matters.
Well, I think because of the impact that Dylan Larkin and the player and the leader and the guy that he is, players have gotten. Patrick Kane went to Detroit because he's like, I think that Detroit and Dylan Larkin is exactly what we want to do. Alex DeBrincat went to Detroit because he's like, hey, you know what? Dylan Larkin and Lucas Raymond and Mo Sider and Patrick Kane and all of that. Now, Kane is a UFA, probably not going back to Detroit. And Larkin's probably going to be gone. And, you've got DeBrincat and Raymond and Sider sitting there saying, we better get something good for that, or we're going to start training camp in September with Dylan Larkin, who wants out. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you have to get it done. That's the problem now, is Steve Yzerman has to do something probably before the draft so that he can say, okay, what's my position going into July 1, and how can I recover this trade that I'm going to lose going into the summertime?
You're sure they're going to lose?
Sure, 100%.
Why?
Because, again, like, you're not going to get the value.
Well, keep in mind, there's an overpayment potential across the league. And I get it. Like, Dylan is trying to dictate the three teams here. So, but I think a lot of things are connected, and it can't always be as concrete as what the player wants. Which team did you? Sorry if I missed it. Did you say which team you think he's going to?
I'm not sure. I think Florida is very likely for me, but they would have to make a move. We mentioned Vegas. I think Vegas always finds a way, but they're already tight to the cap, and they have a Who they got to sign now? Dorofiev, they got to sign. Yeah. That's a lot of money. Well, maybe you trade Dorofiev and, you know, you bring Larkin. You're still way over. Minnesota is interesting. And when I say Detroit losing the deal, regardless of who they trade Larkin to, is basically with past experience. Quinn Hughes going from Vancouver to Minnesota. And look at where it what it did to Minnesota. And now, like, seems like, well, Larkin wants to go to Minnesota. And everybody's like, Minnesota is a good spot. I want to go to Minnesota. I think Minnesota won that deal, being aggressive, still has to be determined if they re-sign Hughes and where that goes. But Vancouver is in a really tough spot here, trying to rebuild for many years. Minnesota could have a Stanley Cup by then. Who knows?
Or they could remain in the ultra-difficult Central Division.
Yes. Well, they will remain in that division. We know that.
We're not anticipating any you know, realignment in the NHL anytime soon. Expansion, perhaps, but not imminent realignment when it comes to the Central. So Vegas is up 2-1 in a Stanley Cup final that is on path to become one of the greatest finals ever.
Well, one goal game, two overtime, comebacks, right? You look at game one, Carolina's up 2-0, Vegas comes back. Game two, Vegas 2-0, Carolina comes back, scores late, the challenge at the end of game two, the Tortorella challenge, all of that. You're looking at, we got bugs in the studio. You're looking at game three. And up 4-0. And I was watching in the second intermission. I'm thinking, what would be my train of thought if I was Carter Hart going into the third period 4-0? And I'm thinking, doesn't matter if you give up a goal or two, and you're going to get a push by Carolina. Just stay in the moment. Three goals on three shots for the second consecutive games in 39 seconds.
39 seconds, obliterating the previous mark. And
crazy.
It really was. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing to watch that it all happened on the heels of a missed Marner penalty shot.
Well, I was going
to
say, so when Wes McCauley calls penalty shot for Mitch Marner, I'm like, that's an easy call to make at 4-0. How about that? The fact that that save by Brendan Bussey makes a whole lot of difference in the game.
Thank goodness
Bussey
he caught
was really
with his
good.
Right hand.
I know he came across just like that to make that save, but Bussey was good. Weird bounce, right?
Terrible.
You look at the Marner first goal that was an own goal by Walker, and then the shot from Theodore off the end wall that goes off of Bussey. We're showing you the back end, you know, penalty shot attempt by Mitch Marner. He had three goals. You know, the natural hat trick could have become the first player in NHL Stanley Cup Finals to score four straight goals since New Zealand alone in 1919.
Wow.
That's a, like, that's something that you look at it and you're like, could not be done.
So you're getting a sample of what happened to Anderson and what Bussey was able to accomplish. And you're right, there were some tough bounces. Obviously, the first Marner goal goes in off Walker. The reality was, though, that despite challenges and situations not going Vegas's way, they did put six pucks past Freddie Anderson in period number two. Four of them counted, and they had the 4-0 lead. Like, how valid is this question right now going into game four tomorrow, the goaltending one for Carolina?
It's very valid because it is not just of game three, where Freddie gave up a couple that were challenged for offside and goalie interference, and then four straight after that gets pulled. They won game two, great, but Freddie was game one, he gave up five. In the Montreal series, he had an 850 save percentage. Montreal didn't shoot, right? So it was still pretty good.
And this has long been a Carolina issue. They never have goaltenders at the top of the league in save percentage because
they don't
tend
give up anything.
Exactly.
But now I'm like, okay, like, looking forward, when is the right time to potentially make the move? Mm-hmm. Is it now in game four in Vegas saying, okay, well, let's give Bussey a run here? It's late in the game to say I'm going to make it a goalie change. If you had done one in round one and one, round two and one, maybe you bounce back and forth. But to go in a Stanley Cup final and make that change is late. But if game four happens and Freddie Anderson is not at the top of his game and Carolina loses, do you make that in game five in a like lose and you lose and you go home. Like, I think this is the time to do it. I would go Brendan Bussey. I've seen Bussey 100% sure.
You're famously loyal to veteran players.
Yes, and to Freddie Anderson. I thought that Freddie was one of the Conn Smythe favorite coming in. But right now, I look
at the winning goal doesn't matter at all? Like how it went in on Bussey?
No, that was a fluke.
Okay.
That was a really... And the saves that he made and the composure that he showed. Oh, he hasn't played in over a month. He comes in...
I think.
Yeah, he comes in and he makes that save on a penalty shot. Looks really good. I would go to Bussey. And then you could always go to Freddie Anderson game five if you have to, depending on what happens in game four.
Yeah, 31-6-2 was Bussey's record this year in his first season. I mean, that was the crazy part. Waiver pickup, comes in, sets records for fastest to 20 wins, fastest to 25 wins. Like, it was historic, and he looked the part. And that's why I don't think there's a real wrong answer here from Carolina's standpoint.
Maybe you're right. And there's wrong answer.
I was, you know, I'm still surprised that Bussey hasn't been their guy all along in the postseason after you start your career 31-6-2. And I get it. Again, save percentage was okay. It was .894, today's new NHL, right? Yeah. Lower save percentage. The moral of the bottom line is you have to win, and Carolina now finds itself in that tricky position as they're down 2-1 despite the historic effort that we saw in their comeback.
When Carolina was up 3-0 to Ottawa in the first round, there was a conversation as maybe you should give Bussey a start.
Yeah.
Because you know what? You may need both of them, and they didn't. Well, and it went really well. They went 12-1 in the first like three rounds.
Couple more awards handed out over the weekend. Connor McDavid has matched Wayne Gretzky for the most MVPs as voted on by the players. He claims his fifth Ted Lindsay Award. It really is something. Associated Press reports that Celebrini was second, which is quite a feather in his cap here. But it is what's interesting, not only is that McDavid does it again, but that at some point there became apathy towards voting for Gretzky during the course of his career, and he only got five of them.
We don't want to vote for him anymore. I mean, come on. And this is interesting because the Hart Trophy goes to the most valuable player. The Ted Lindsay Award, and it used to be the Lisa Pearson. Yeah, Hart is voted by media. The Pearson Lindsay Award, it used to be Pearson, it switched to Lindsay, is voted by the players. It's to the best player in the league. The fact that the players think that Macklin Celebrini is the second best player in the league is incredible. Right. Connor McDavid's still the best player in the league. You have great players, Kucherov and McKinnon, and you could go to McCarr, you could go to a lot of different people.
What the heck is this, he says, when he gets it presented to him on the golf course?
He's on the golf course. This is a little different, but yes.
Exactly. Shouldn't he recognize the award by now?
Yeah, I know. He's probably thinking, like, why are you guys disturbing my round? I'm -2 right now going into 8. You're slowing my pace. But listen, Connor McDavid's still the best player in the game. And you can have the debate, like, who else is you know, challenging McDavid. I still think, just like Wayne Gretzky, like, Wayne Gretzky was the best player in the league, people decided to vote for other players.
No surprise Vasilevsky got the Vezina?
For me, no surprise. And actually, had Swayman ahead of Vasilevsky personally, but I think that Vasilevsky was the guy to win.
And how surprised are you that Joe Pavelski has entered the coaching search from the Maple Leafs perspective?
I'm not surprised. We look at Marty St. Louis and what he's been able to do. So I think that it would be an out-of-the-box candidate, but there's a chance Pavelski finds himself behind the bench at some point.
All right. It is an MB43 D&D today.
So
on the links again.
On
here
the
we
links
go.
Again. And I was scrolling around TV yesterday, and I came across the second half, the back nine of the Women's U.S. Open. And Nelly Korda was leading, and then she was tied, and then she made that putt on 18, barely went in. And I don't remember who was calling the game or any of the analysts said her season is an incredible season. So I went to look at it. This was her eighth tournament of the season. She has won four tournaments, finished runner-up three times, and was tied for eighth place the other one. She has not finished outside of the top eight in any event And seven of the eight, she was top two.
She laughed, though, about the ice cream swirl, as she called it, around the cup.
Around the cup.
Her biggest moment was the birdie on 17 to break away from the tie. And obviously, had she missed that little two-and-a-half-footer, she would have ended up going to a playoff. But once again, in the winner's circle.
She only won over $2 million this year in seven events, winning three for runner-up, and now she's obviously gone way up.
Well, it was the biggest purse they'd had for the U.S. Women's Open. Yes. It was $2.5 million, so great for her.
So she doubled her winning, and she's not finished outside the top 10 yet this year.
Well, all the prospects who were here for the combine in Buffalo last week are, you know, looking, hoping for that day when they get their first pro contract, and yet that's not top of mind right now when teams are interviewing these players. You've lived through the combine experience. There was some great reporting over the weekend. Jeff Merrick obviously has been, you know, front and center with finding out some of the questions that get presented to prospects who are hoping to fulfill their NHL dreams. Mm-hmm. Now, Jeff said that the Islanders put a brick in front of prospects and asked what they could do with it.
So well, this is why I brought a brick from home. It's actually a paver.
It's probably why we have
brick.
Bugs in the studio.
Maybe that is why. I get better like, there's one right here. So here's the thing. I said, when Merrick said some of the question, I responded to his tweet saying, like, the Esposito brothers asked me if I wanted a beer before the interview started. Phil and Tony Esposito with the Tampa Bay Lightning the day before the draft. Not, like, a month before. The day before, in their hotel suite, they were interviewing players. I'm there with my agent, Gilles Loupian, at the time. And I think it was Phil. He goes, Marty, you want a beer? And they reached in the fridge, right? And I looked over to my agent, like, should I say yes? Like, he's like, no. Okay, no, thank you. I'm good. But now it's different, right? They're asking all these weird questions. Uh-huh. So what would you do with a brick?
What
so
I'm asking, could they do?
What could they do? What could you do, Duffer, with this brick?
I'm here only to be entertained by you, so I want your answer as to what you would have done when presented with that question.
As a 17 and 18-year-old, I think I would say maybe to hold my net down in the backyard, like I'm shooting pucks and the net keeps flipping over.
I love
so
that.
I'm using bricks to hold the net down. But now,
but what if you're? But was it exclusive though? Like, are you using the brick in conjunction with something else, or are they asking what can you and this brick alone accomplish?
I think I'm trying to find ways to incorporate sports and the brick. Mm. Like, you know how you used to put like two cans or whatever to make the net? Well, put two bricks and make the net in the street. It's easy. Or all of that, right? Something to put your water bottle on so it's not like laying down in the grass and getting bugs. Obviously, we're getting bugs, but whatever. Nowadays, this brick is best suited to make sure my barbecue, my grill is leveled in the backyard because the pavers are not straight.
Yes.
Or to hold down the umbrella when it's windy, like you put it on the umbrella stand so it holds it down, or the tent when baseball and soccer parents.
Imagine if I was presented with this question and I broke out into a cold sweat and told them that I was assaulted with one once.
I would always
It's a story
keep
for deeper into the summer,
in
but it really did happen.
In case somebody throws a brick at me, I'm ready to throw one back.
Okay. Just hope that you have Brad May on your team in situations. Yeah. I'm not to diminish all the other questions, but we need to get to the golf ball one here. Okay. Apparently, this was Nashville asking prospects to stack golf balls to see how long they could focus on the task before quitting.
So there's a trick to that. You got to make sure you look at the dimples of the ball. Make sure that you get big dimples to be able to lay it on one another. So this is what I'm doing right now. And then I'm going to try. Oh, I almost
you
had
almost
it.
Had it.
The problem is I shake. Ta-da.
You did it.
It literally took me 5 seconds, and I have not tried this.
I wouldn't let him try it.
Before. You wouldn't. I tried to grab two balls. And look at this. So I think I'd get drafted by the Nashville Predators. I should send them this clip and say, I'm available. Who's their new GM?
McFarlane.
There you go, McFarlane. I got it done. That's easy.
Did you play with Rob Blake at the Worlds?
No, never played with Rob Blake.
No?
Okay. No.
Because he's now there, obviously, as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, there was one more.
Yes. There was a puck involved in that or something.
Oh, no.
What I could do with golf balls, too? I would say, give me three, and I can juggle. Oh. There you go.
If you went and ordered a sandwich with cheese but got a sandwich without cheese, would you let it go or go back and make them fix it?
I'm so non-confrontational. I would let it go. Like sometimes, and I will say this, I go through the drive-through. I want a little a burger. I'm not a, you know, full stuff on it. I'm ketchup only in it and whatever. And then it comes in with onions and relish and mustard, and I'm like, I'll eat it, whatever. Like yeah. I don't want to go back. I'm not going back.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back anymore.
You know what? Yeah. Cheese or no cheese? I like it with cheese, but you know, I'm not going back.
Conjuring up images of Joe Pesci and Lethal Weapon too.
The only thing
remember?
I would
the drive through.
Yeah, the drive through.
We can't repeat it.
The only thing I would go back for is if I asked for like a Coke and I get a diet.
Oh.
No way. No way.
There's
I will
your trigger.
Not stand. I will not stand for diet. I want the real thing.
We're back after this on Sabres Live on this abbreviated Monday edition. Stay with us.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres fans, lock in your seats for the 26-27 season with a Sabres 10-game plan. Enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, and a guaranteed seat location. Choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, plus nine more games. Learn more and secure your plan today at sabres.com/10.
The boards, tip free and picked up by Brown. Curtis Brown to the Dallas line and over. Jammed it in wide of the net. Sanderson was slowed down. Brown keeping it in.
Got it in front. The score! Jason Woolley! Jason Woolley! The shot heard round the world! The shot heard round the hockey world! And Jason Woolley has won the game in overtime!
RJ's call, and on this date, 1999, the Sabres, thanks to Jason, opened up the Cup Final with a win in Dallas.
Yeah, what a win. What a game. What a play by Curtis Brown. The dump pin was about as simple as possible. He's just, I'm getting rid of that puck, and then he goes on
the forecheck.
So it
wasn't a placement,
and then
Guy
Carboneau came in. What a
sulky.
Terrible forward defending on Curtis Brown. He allowed that pass to go to Willie. No. And I was in Rochester. We were in the Calder Cup final by then. We ended up losing to Providence. Came up later in that series to be a black ace with the team. But, yes, I remember watching the game and seeing that live on the TV.
You made for a happy birthday for Rob Ray back then and
right.
Presumably today as well. Razor is 58.
I talked to Razor a couple days ago, and I didn't wish him happy birthday then. I will call him again and wish him a happy birthday today.
You know what's disturbing is I feel like I've caught up to him in age over time. It feels like it. That's not
like
good
that.
For me.
Yeah, and Pat Coletta today. No, you're not catching up to Pat Coletta. He's not catching up. So, Patty had the fishing tournament the other day, last Thursday, and he looks like he could still play. Like, he's so fit, so thin, so in shape, but he's 40.
Yeah, Patty was the last analyst to talk about a Sabre win in the studio during the postseason.
I tried to be more like Pat Coletta and put a tie on the next time we were here for Game 7.
Don't ever do that again.
And,
we're going to do this like at some point, like things that shouldn't be done going into an elimination game.
Putting a tie on? I always want to look my best for those type
that
of
you
games.
You never have in studio here. It was so out of the equation.
Yeah, but Coletta did it, so I'm going to do it too.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
What would Coletta do?
Ongoing.
Is this Bugs?
Jesus,
sorry,
Bugs
I brought
you
Bugs
brought
in.
Unbelievable. Sam Cosentino will join us from Sportsnet tomorrow because we're going to continue our ramp up to the draft, which happens in Buffalo on the 26th and 27th. Thanks for being with us today. We'll see you again tomorrow.